They say history is written by the winners. That's certainly the case with a new book by Howard Weaver, the former managing editor of the Anchorage Daily News. Write Hard, Die Free, dispatches from the battlefields and barrooms of the Great Alaska Newspaper War, tells of a time when the city of Anchorage was one of the last of its size to have two newspapers in competition. The Daily News won, APRN's Steve Heimel reports.
The Anchorage Daily News had none of the prestige of the city's afternoon paper, the Anchorage Times. But Howard Weaver says in the early 1970s, that underdog position was a perfect fit for a working-class kid from Muldoon with big ambitions.
It was definitely number two in terms of money and circulation and prestige and influence. But it had, as a result, this kind of quest feeling. At the Daily News, we had the opportunity to do that in ways that, frankly, the Anchorage Times didn't. I mean, they were a very establishment newspaper. Not surprising. They were the establishment. But there were certain constraints, I think, on them that we didn't feel, and that opened up the field to us to do a lot of things, and we had some real fun doing it.
The newspaper business in those early years was a lot more colorful than it later became, and Weaver describes that atmosphere with relish. He did a lot of police reporting, and then the pipeline boom hit Alaska, and there was plenty to write about. The paper nearly went broke, though, and rather than get laid off, Weaver quit and joined forces with other reporters, forming a paper of their own, The Advocate. It never made money, but it was colorful, and it suited the outrageous times the paper wrote about. By the time it went broke 2 years later, Daily News publisher Kay Fanning had sold her paper to the McClatchy chain in Sacramento. And that's where the money came from to go up against the Times. On the way, the Daily News won two Pulitzer Prizes for public service, most recently in 1988 for the series People in Peril, which documented the ravages of alcoholism and suicide in Alaska Native villages. It was one of many risks the paper took.
I was very aware going into this that we were in an urban, largely white newspaper writing about the problems of rural, largely brown people. And that is just loaded. And both suicide and alcoholism are issues that are surrounded by denial, right? Nobody talks about their cousin's suicide. Nobody talks about their mom's alcoholism. But the fact is, we became convinced that it was such a huge problem and that if people didn't talk about it, there was no hope to fix it. Now, obviously, it's extremely difficult to fix, and our stories did not fix it. I wish I could even say with any confidence that they started the fix, but I do know that they made it legitimate to talk about it.
In writing his story for Epicenter Press, Weaver discovered he had to write about his own alcohol problem as well. It was needed, he says, to explain why the later part of the book was so different from the earlier part.
I mean, I needed to tell people drinking had been such a big part of my early career that it just wasn't honest to not mention that a big change came right in the middle, sort of 1985. I think about that sometimes. And, you know, as an adult, I guess I've now been sober longer than I was not sober.
But the bad old days of the Anchorage Daily News had their Pulitzer, too. That one came for a series on Teamsters Local 959, which grew amazingly wealthy and powerful during the pipeline era. The stories by Weaver and Bob Porterfield were viewed as an exposé of abuses, but Weaver says they also documented a time of unprecedented ascendancy in the history of organized labor nationwide.
We spent a lot of time talking about some of the abuses and some of the problems politically and otherwise that they had created, but the fact is, during that window of opportunity of the Trans-Alaska Pipeline construction, it was an extraordinary institution.
There was a time when the Teamsters even had their own hospital. But they couldn't hold on to their wealth after the boom and ended up going bankrupt. The newspaper business, too, hit hard times with the advent of the Internet. Weaver ended up helping McClatchy to pilot its way into a web presence, but the chain also took on a lot of debt in acquiring other papers, and the results were waves of employee buyouts, especially in Alaska. Now there is far less overall reporting by all news media, and nobody knows what the future of journalism is. But Howard Weaver is one of those who remains upbeat.
The fact is that people with a passion for things will find a way to exercise that passion, and it won't always be the same. Tomorrow's journalism will not be the same. Certainly the delivery systems won't be the same. But I fully expect that it will evolve and mature into a valuable contribution, and that the young people sitting out there today, you know, who are 21, 2, 3 years old, are going to be the ones that figure that out. I got a chance to do it. I sat there, I played this incredible long shot, and it paid off into a 40-year career that you know, I got to do a lot of stuff. I made some money. I made an enormous number of friends, and I had fun.
Weaver says he might write another book, tracing the roots of the rise of a different sort of spirit in the state than what he grew up with. He's not the first person to observe that everything changed with the pipeline boom, but he was certainly in a good position to watch how it happened. In Anchorage, I'm Steve Heimel.